Committee. The committee hereby come to order. Today we have only one bill heard. It's a bill that's necessary to implement the budget, so it's after the normal cutoff period. We'll be concluding with a work session among committee members after this, but let's have a hearing on this important bill, second substitute Senate Bill 5105 related to felony DUI. Let's have a report from staff, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate Bill 5105 relates to impaired driving. By way of background, a person commits driving under the influence of intoxicating liquor or drugs by either driving or having physical control of a vehicle and has within 2 hours of driving a blood or breath concentration of 0.08 or higher, or just by being impaired. Now, although there are numerous administrative and criminal sanctions for DUI, generally DUI is a gross misdemeanor offense with a variety of mandatory penalties. However, the crime can be elevated to a seriousness level 5 Class C felony offense if the person has 4 or more prior offenses within 10 years. In addition, a person can also be subject to numerous fines and fees. Under Senate Bill 5105, it would make it a felony offense to commit 3 or more prior DUI offenses instead of 4 or more. In addition, it would also reduce a felony DUI offense from a seriousness level 5 to a seriousness level 4 offense. What this would mean is that an offender would get a sentence of 13 to 17 months instead of 22 to 29 months. Lastly, the bill would impose an additional $50 fee on all persons convicted, sentenced to a lesser charge, or given a deferred prosecution as a result of arrest for violating a DUI, physical control, vehicle homicide, or vehicle assault offense. Revenue from that $50 fee must be distributed to the Washington Traffic Safety Commission to provide grants to organizations within counties to reduce driving under the influence of alcohol or drugs. I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Okay, thank you, Yvonne. So the current law is that your fifth DUI within 10 years becomes a felony. This would be your fourth DUI within 10 years.
That
the
10-year
period remains? Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Are there any other questions from the panel? Let's welcome the chair of the Senate Law and Justice Committee, Senator Patton. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you very much, and good morning, Representative Goodman and other members of the House Public Safety Commission. You know, Representative Goodman, you and I were on the task force here a couple years ago in which we made major progress in fighting DUIs and Senate Bill 5912. But this was one of the unfinished pieces of business. It was part of the recommendations that we've been both working on here for the last few years. We know that DUI is a preventable offense. It's very sad that there were 220 victims here in this state last year. We're doing a lot of things, and I want to accentuate the positive stuff and Target Zero and other things that the Traffic Safety Commission is doing, and law enforcement and prosecutors and victims groups and prevention groups, but there's more to do until we can reduce that number down to zero in the future. 45 states have felony DUI laws, and we were very late to getting one. It was only a few years ago that Representative Ahern got the bill through on the 5 within 10 years, and that took quite an effort. So, and we've been working, like I said earlier, to reduce it down to 4. So you're going to hear today from law enforcement and from some victims, and I know you all know the need for this. I just want to say the reason that this hasn't happened earlier, people have always indicated we support the policy, but it's the impact on our prison system and the cost. So that is the reason that we went to a level 4 rather than a level 5. I personally like to see the level 5. But thank goodness, because of 5912, we now have supervision on all felony DUIs that get out of our state prison system, which we didn't have before. So that will continue. We'll have them in, and then they will be supervised. And the whole idea, of course, is to reduce the number of these preventable fatalities. So. I'm also happy that there is going to be some money in here for prevention efforts. We have a lot of excellent groups around the state that are working hard to educate young people and others about the problems of driving drunk or drugged. So this is part of our continuing efforts. I thank the committee very much, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thanks very much, Senator. It's been an honor to work with you on these issues. We have made a lot of progress. Yvonne, is there, or perhaps I could ask you, Senator, about the fiscal note. I don't have my computer in front of me, so I don't know.
Can you bring it up on the screen, please? There is a fiscal note, and I believe it's about $3.2 million. It's an increase of, I believe, 276 cases.
Okay, so bringing it down to level four makes a big difference.
Well, and that is in the Senate budget. I heard it was in the House budget. I haven't verified that, but and there's some people here that can testify on that, but I've, corresponded and talked to Amy Friedheim previously, who's the chief felony DUI prosecutor in King County, and she's pointed out that the fiscal note doesn't really take into account how much time these type of individuals spend in the county system pre-trial, because normally the bail is set pretty high if you're, you know, had three or four priors, and they are in, she said, an average of about 6 months before trial. So a lot of that time
counts
is,
towards
they
the,
get credit for later.
We're making the locals pay for it.
Right.
Representative Clifford has a question.
Thank you, Chair Goodman. Senator Patton, you and I, this is a passion of ours. This is something we want to see happen because we want to keep repeat offenders off our roads and our highways so they will not injure anyone else. Would you want the legislature, your fellow legislators, to see this as a priority in our budget? I know this is a policy committee, not a fiscal committee, but...
Well, absolutely. I think public safety has to be a priority, and I think we need more of us to champion public safety as a... It is a priority, and especially on a bill like this, because we know that the repeat offenders have an average, the Traffic Safety Commission stats are about 80 times before they are arrested. And these folks that have the repeat DUI offenses are the ones most likely to have a vehicular assault or vehicular homicide. And so that's one of the reasons it's so important. But yes, I certainly think it should be a priority.
Thank you, Senator.
Thanks. Any other questions? Thanks again for bringing this forward. Let's hear some testimony. Now, there are people from come from all over the state to testify on this, and out of consideration for them, we're going to call them up first. First, let's have Alex and Jackie Panettone from Yakima come forward, please. Just for the record, make sure you introduce yourself by name, and then we're not going to be too rough on you.
We have a picture of our family and my dad, my mom.
Jackie,
Sorry.
Jackie Panettone, Yakima, Washington.
And I'm Alex Panettone from Yakima, Washington. At the age of 22, I no longer have a grandpa, or gramps as I love to call him. You may be thinking that, yes, this is a part of life, everyone dies, but you didn't know my gramps. Russ Bartlett could have lived until he was 120 years old. This man was tough. Thinking back to all the memories, I can't remember a single time when my gramps was upset. Well, unless the Mariners were losing. Besides that, he was the easiest going person I've ever met. Gramps loved being with his big family, riding his bicycle everywhere he went, running errands with my granny, and most of all, spending his retired days barbering. If it weren't for the terrible decisions that were made on the day of May 29th, 2014, by the 27-year-old woman that hit and killed him, he would still be alive and happy today. My gramps was out for a walk going to visit the Relay for Life event down at KMA, our local news station, while their Honda was getting serviced. She was driving her boyfriend's motorhome under the influence of alcohol and drugs. Just picture one of your loved ones, maybe a sister, brother, daughter, mother, violently getting hit and thrown into the air, 60 feet from behind, from a large motorhome. That's what I had to picture over and over when I heard of the news that he had been killed. After visiting the accident site the next day, we had to see the skid marks from his tennis shoes, where his body hit the ground far away from those marks, and even found his glasses that had been thrown off his face while he was walking, missing a lens and bent out of shape. This day has forever changed my life. This wonderful man did not deserve this. No one deserves to leave the earth like this. The violence that occurred that day has stuck with my family and me the most. I could not sleep by myself for the next 3 weeks because of how pained and sad I felt. I have never lost someone so close to me before, and the grieving process had just begun. I missed a lot of work and couldn't be by myself for very long. Driving places was the worst. I was constantly thinking of my grandpa. I couldn't bring myself to understand that he was no longer on this earth. I began to feel my anger building. This woman had so many run-ins with the law, and she did not deserve to be free. Most of all, this woman didn't deserve to have her hands on anything, such as alcohol or drugs. After knowing she hit my grandpa, she decided to continue on her line of terrible decisions and run from the police that had just witnessed it all. This is a serious crime to our family. Our laws should make us feel protected and safe. Instead, there are no real serious consequences for drinking and driving until there are 5 strikes against you. I believe you should get 1 warning when you make a mistake. The next is serious because you should know better by then. Holidays and birthdays have been the hardest. Christmas especially has always been my favorite holiday because my family of 5 and my granny and grandpa would always come over. We had our traditions every year on this holiday, and this year it just wasn't the same. Gramps loved his kids and grandchildren immensely. I feel as though my heart and mind are forever changed from his death. I have had to forgo counseling because of the pain and sadness that I've had to endure. I work each week on surviving through the pain and the anger that I feel. The first few months were a blur, and I didn't realize how much my physical actions were being affected by this. I thought I was able to hide a lot of my sadness until my parents thought it'd be a good idea to seek some help they couldn't give me. I've lost a few friendships and feel as though I'm not able to be as happy and as positive as I once was. Having to go to work and keep up the energy is also hard because I feel as though I'm always thinking of my gramps and what he's doing in heaven. I've had to overcome great anxiety and stress due to the numerous hearings for a lowered bail, omnibus dates, and the upcoming trial that we will also have to sit through because she has decided to plead innocent. I hope that you see how hard this truly is for my family, and that we are just one family that has been impacted by this serious crime. Every day, according to MAD, Mothers Against Drunk Driving, 28 people die from this crime in America. The law needs to change, and you all have the ability and power to do so. This should not come down to money or politics. It should be about what is right and to help this country head in the right direction. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much, Alex. Jackie.
I really don't have much to add to that, just the fact that our family really hasn't had a lot of run-ins with the law, but we were shocked when we found out that in the state of Washington that it's 5 convicted DUIs before you receive a felony on your record. Shocked. And every person that we have shared that with has been shocked. And I think that our state should be ashamed of itself and needs to make some changes. Because we're only one family that's been affected. And there's a lot of other people out there that could be sitting here today, too, sharing a lot of, the same story. So,
thank you to both of you for coming forward. And, you know, we look at these horrible incidents too often as statistics, just numbers. And, in fact, each one of those numbers is a human being who has a family and friends and a neighborhood and a whole community that there's a ripple effect of this tragedy. So thanks for coming forward, for taking the time to come, and for the courage to tell your story. So, and we're very sorry for your loss. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Let's hear from Matthew and Karen Bartlett now from Yakima as well. Also, I can't quite read this. Dolls Panettone. Sorry about that. Please proceed.
Good morning. My name is Matt Bartlett. I am the youngest son of Russell Bartlett. I'm an emergency department registered nurse. I volunteer in my community as a firefighter. And none of those things prepared me for the events of May 29th of 2014. While walking on a sidewalk, as Alex mentioned earlier, at 9:30 in the morning, my dad was struck from behind by a drunk driver. With his spine broken in two places, my dad was sent hurling through the air, orange paint marking where his head struck the ground three times before his body came to a rest 60 feet away, marked by more orange paint. The driver veered back onto the road, fled the scene. My dad did not die. My dad did not pass away peacefully. My dad was murdered by a drunk driver. His death 100% preventable and the result of one person's decision to drive drunk. My dad survived two tours in Vietnam. He survived 10 years as a police officer in Eastern Oregon and 25 years as a correctional officer, sergeant, and classification counselor at the Washington State Penitentiary in Walla Walla. But my dad could not survive a drunk driver. At times like this, people often say of a 72-year-old man, he lived a good life. Well, my dad did live a good life. And he was living a good life with my mom right up until the instance a drunk driver drove her motorhome onto a sidewalk and killed him. He had many more years ahead of him. You see, my dad wasn't a typical 72-year-old. He walked almost daily, regularly went on long-distance bike rides, and stayed active volunteering with hospice, his church, and anybody else that needed a hand. He even worked part-time, even though he was retired. He and my mom frequently traveled in their RV, as well as taking frequent day trips. He could keep up with all of his kids and grandkids and participated in a family softball game just a month before his death. I always joked that if he kept this up, he'd be taking care of me when I got old. He will not get to see my children graduate high school or college or give him more great-grandchildren. He won't get to see me celebrate my milestone anniversaries with my wife like he and my mom did. No more backyard bocce ball games, no more barbecues, no more holidays together, because there's no more dad, all because of the decision made to drive drunk. A reliable sample of traits, acts, tendencies, or other observable characteristics of a person, group, or institution. This is the definition of a pattern, according to Merriam-Webster. Now remember that definition when I tell you about the findings of a National Transportation Safety Board study referred to as SR-1301. This study found that persons arrested for DUI reported driving an average of 80 times before being detected and arrested for DUI. 80 times. Long before being arrested, offenders have proven a pattern of driving drunk. So why would we allow them multiple DUI convictions before it becomes a felony? We don't allow people to commit the crime of assault multiple times before it becomes a felony, or any other crime for that matter. As lawmakers of this state, you have an obligation to the people to protect them from the preventable harm that drunk driving can cause. You can do this by passing laws that make the consequence of DUI conviction so severe that it deters people from driving drunk. The first step is State Bill 5105. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Matt.
Good morning. Thank you for inviting our family here today. We really appreciate it. My name is Karen Bartlett. I'm Russ's wife. He was my husband, grandfather, and great-grandfather. Russ Bartlett was my soulmate for 50 years, almost 51. He was killed May 29th. Our 51st would have been June or July 1st. Russ was hit out walking and waiting while our car was being serviced. He was hit from behind, throwing him 50 feet through the air, breaking his back and neck, killing him almost instantly. The woman that hit him was 27 years old, was drunk and on drugs. Before taking her boyfriend's 23-foot motorhome for a drive at 9 in the morning, she took out a power pole before hitting Russ. Our family has been devastated without him in our lives. Our four children, 11 grandchildren, and three great have all been affected by his death from the hands of this woman. Russ was a part-time barber, hospice volunteer, and avid health nut. He acted like a 50-year-old with all his energy. He loved helping people. And most of all, he loved me, his family, life, and God. We would like to see this bill reduced to 2, with a third a felony, but we'll settle for 3 with the fourth right now, Next year, we will be back to get that accomplished. Our state is way too lenient on drunk drivers, and too many lives are being lost due to this lackadaisy law. Please find it in your heart for Russ's sake, which is our website that we have, and we have like 400 followers.
Is it called For Russ's Sake?
For Russ's Sake.
Dot com?
It's a Facebook.
It's a Facebook
page.
Site,
okay,
yes.
Too
many lives are being lost due to this lackadaisy law. Please find it in your heart for Russ's sake and pass this final phase of Bill 5105. And thank you for your time. We really appreciate this today.
Well, thank you for taking the time to come here.
I have
here.
Some bracelets, too. Would you like one?
We'll all take one,
okay.
I think.
So,
Russ,
if I could add something.
Yeah.
I just learned this morning when I got here that there was some question as to the cost of the bill. And I can only say to you this. Washington State has no problem convicting, sentencing, and imprisoning people whose crime is possessing, using, or dealing drugs, including marijuana, which is now legal in this state. I understand there's a cost associated with this. Those people sought out their addiction. They sought out the drugs. My family and the other families affected by drunk driving did not seek out a drunk driver. A drunk driver sought out our family, and it can happen to anyone. I hope it never happens to anyone. And as far as the cost goes, there's no dollar amount to compare to the loss of life. You can't. I know you have to as lawmakers, but in my mind, there is no cost associated with losing my dad.
Thank you, Matt, for your eloquent and heartfelt statement. You know, you're saying that 80 times, someone drives 80 times before they're caught. That means that in Washington State, on an annual basis, there are 2.3 million drunk drivers on our roads, usually Thursday, Friday, Saturday night. So we definitely have to do something about this. Representative Griffey.
Find any one of us.
Thank you so much for your testimony. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm a professional firefighter in my other job, and I lost my best friend. I actually responded on the call and had to take her out. If there's anything we can do and I can do in my power to keep drunk drivers off the road, I'm going to do it. So thank you so much for your courage to come out here.
Thank you. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. We're going to hear from law enforcement now. So let's hear from three sheriffs, Spokane County. I'm sorry. Larry Haskell from Spokane County, prosecuting attorney. Casey Salisbury from Mason County, and Paul Pastor from Pierce County.
You go first.
Okay. Good morning.
Good morning.
Chairman Goodman and members of the committee, for the record, I'm Larry Haskell. I currently serve the people of Spokane County as their Spokane County prosecuting attorney. I want to thank all the members of this committee for allowing me to speak on behalf of my office and the people of Spokane County that I have a duty to protect. When I ran for this office, I told the people of Spokane that the most important duty of the prosecuting attorney is to protect the public, not just from traditional violent crime, but this crime as well. Today, I too wear Russ's bracelet, and I hope that next year, through the help of this committee, there will not be a new bracelet to wear. Impaired drivers on our state's roadways have been and continue to put the public at risk. The recent legalization of marijuana and the ease with which it is available has only compounded the problem. The numbers in Spokane County are up for drug alone, as well as drug and alcohol mixed arrests. An impaired driver transforms their vehicle into the street equivalent of an unguided missile. In a given year in Spokane County alone, we will prosecute numerous vehicular assaults and homicides based on the predictable and entirely preventable actions of an impaired driver. And those are the ones, those unguided missiles that landed. Our great state leads the way in programs designed to reduce incidents of impaired driving and reduce recidivism of those who have committed the crime on a previous occasion. In Spokane, we are actively involved in the Target Zero program, which is aimed at achieving zero traffic fatalities and serious injuries by 2030. This committee has the power to move that target date up. We have also in Spokane a high-intensity supervision DUI therapeutic court, and by the numbers and the reduction in recidivism of those offenders shows that increased supervision works in DUIs. But there are, and there always will be, drivers who either are unable or unwilling to respond. For those repeat offenders who greatly increase the likelihood of a tragedy occurring, and not one of us is unfamiliar with it, as has already been presented by testimony today, the likelihood of a tragedy occurring is the duty of elected officials, we, who have the confidence, and we, who are the voice of the people, to step forward and protect the public against this threat. That, I believe, was and continues to be the motivation behind the enactment of felony DUI laws in Washington State. And now it's time to make them tougher. It's time to step up and meet this challenge and meet this threat. We talk about the cost. There's a fiscal note. Let's look at the other fiscal note. Let's look at the lives that are lost, the productivity of those people in the state, the contributions that they make, the property damage, the pain, and the immeasurable grief that everybody goes through. Next year, the name on the bracelet could be someone that you know or someone very close to you. And that is the reality. So I join my fellow members of WAPA, the Washington Association of Sheriffs and Police Chiefs, the Washington Traffic Safety Commission, the sponsors of this bill, and all those that have either previously testified or will testify following my testimony, with my full support, and I encourage the House of Representatives through this committee's efforts to pass this bill and send it to Governor Inslee for his signature. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Larry. Sheriff?
Good morning. I'm Sheriff Casey Salisbury, the Mason County Sheriff's Office, also representing Wasbeck. A number of years ago, a typical night at my house, our phone rings a few times a night in the middle of the night in the last 8 years since I've become sheriff. Just a couple of years after becoming sheriff, I had a phone call I didn't expect. That it was from a chaplain in eastern Washington requesting that I respond to a DUI incident in eastern Washington. Mason County's far on the far west side. I didn't expect it would involve my brother-in-law and a good friend. And I drove to eastern Washington to find out that the good friend had perished in that incident with that DUI driver. Even more difficult from that, as he had a child that was yet not born, that she's never seen her dad. And to look back and know what the driving record of that individual was, that this person had well beyond the number of DUIs we're even speaking of today, well beyond five DUIs, to take that life. It's just another one of the stories, and hearing the testimony from this morning from the Panettones and the Bartletts, it continues to occur. Myself and the other representatives of Washington Association Chiefs and Sheriff's Association, I've seen this time and time and time again. Law enforcement officers, firefighters from my own county, oftentimes will arrive in a collision. And if it's a property accident collision, we're saying to ourselves, well, here we are again with the same guy. Thank goodness he didn't kill somebody again this time. When you know them that well that you can show up to the scene and recognize the car or the name of the person, it's occurred that many times, that's problematic. I would encourage you today, on the support of this bill, to consider the thoughts and the concerns and the lives of these other people that were here today and with their testimony. Thank you.
Thanks, Sheriff. You know, we expect from a sheriff testimony about what's happening in the community or trends or statistics, and hear you tell a personal story about your own friend, and that shows how far this crime extends. So, thanks. Paul.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thank you. My name is Paul Pastor. I have the privilege of serving as sheriff in Pierce County, and I am here as well in support of this bill. In the last several years, we have seen something that is very positive, and that's a growing awareness of the problem of impaired driving in our state. We've had more efforts against impaired driving. The culture has begun to shift. People are a little more careful, many of them, about drinking and driving and drugging and driving, and thank goodness for that, but the work isn't done. There is much more to do. There is an awakening and a growing awareness, and I believe we need to reinforce that. We need to build on that. There are three things that I would ask you to consider and your colleagues to consider as you look at this bill. And the first is accountability. Accountability through law is important. But there's another kind of accountability we seldom talk about when we talk about DUI and DWI issues. The law is a leverage. The law is a mechanism to getting people to stop, to getting people into treatment, to getting people supervised. That's important as well, not just in terms of punishment accountability or individual deterrence, but in terms of getting people to choose another path. And that, increasing penalties, has helped that happen for hundreds and thousands of people, and it needs to happen more. There's the individual deterrence issue, and you've heard about that recently. Just now, what if these people who'd been convicted several other times had been off the street? What if? The future would be different. These people's lives would be different. The lives of our deputies and law enforcement officers and firefighters would be different. Remember, people with badges on spend just a heck of a lot of time out on the road. We also are in danger from impaired drivers. Yes, we care deeply about the public. We also care about our own. There is a threat to our people as well. So individual deterrence of taking these people off the road earlier, if they're going to repeat and repeat and repeat, unless some drastic intervention takes place, why should we assume that they would not repeat again and again? There was a fiscal note and some economics, and I'm being the more dry presenter, but bear with me. The criminal justice system is a continuum. At the lower end of the continuum are jails and prosecutors. There is a cost to arresting and rearresting and housing these people in county jails. So it's not either a state cost or nothing. It is a question of a state cost or a county cost on this repeat offenders. So please know that and remember that. And Representative Clippert, I know that you know that up close and personal with your law enforcement background. I, too, can tell stories. When you're the first unit arriving and you get there, as the sheriff said, and you know this person has been involved before, you stare up and you shake your head and you say, why? Why again? Why should these people be able not to get the intervention they need, whether it's individual deterrence or treatment, to change things? That's what we need to be about. It's the right thing to do. You know what? It's also the economically prudent thing to do. When you can combine those two together, why wouldn't you support something like this? Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much, Chair. Does the panel have any questions? Representative Hayes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For Mr. Prosecutor, there have been many other different types of sanctions studied when it comes down to combating DUI, sanctions against the suspects and people who are convicted of DUI, whether it's a felony or not. What would your recommendations be for additional sanctions just beyond the felony level for repeat DUI offenders?
One of the things that when this subject came up during the campaign, and one of the things that I felt is a combination of tools. I once prosecuted a guy when I was in district court who had 8 prior DUI convictions. And for him, it was just a cost of doing business. 8 months in the county jail, 1/3 off for good time. I'm back out. It's time to kind of heal a little bit because alcohol, regardless of whether they actually realize it or not, or drugs, takes an effect on the body. And while they're in jail, they actually get a little better, okay? But then they're back out. And at the time, without the felony DUI bill, there was nothing left. There's no supervision or anything like that. But I advertise treatment with borders when it comes to repeat offenders, people that just don't respond. They're either unwilling or they're unable to respond to the traditional treatments that have always been associated with the DUI conviction as a penalty. When you get up to this level where they're 80 times before they get caught once, and here we are, and we're talking about DUI number 4, DUI number 5, you know, we as responsible people, the people that represent the people of the state, have a duty to step up and say, well, we're going to have to use some other tools here. So I think that a short prison stay might be a wake-up call for some of these people. A felony alone carries some longer-term disabilities and still garners a little bit of fear in their minds. But I also believe that the supervision piece, which is available with the felony DUI, is critically important. And not just check in once a month or something like that with your DOC officer. We're talking about treatment programs. We're talking about the level of treatment intervention that's represented by the intense supervision DUI court that we have. Multiple phases, multiple goals, just a kind of a constant year-long, call it what you want, but treatment, encouragement, you could call it babysitting, but getting them to change that lifestyle that the other officers were talking about to understand what the danger is and get them along the path towards a better way of life and hopefully the ability to make better decisions. Without the supervision piece, I do believe that incarceration alone is just a timeout.
Great. Any other questions? Representative Griffey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You might know the answer. If you don't, that's fine. If somebody enters into treatment, but they really do not commit, what is the statistics there? I mean, do you think there's a level of treatment that we can push somebody into making that commitment, or they get done with the treatment program and go right back into their bad path? I mean, do you have a comment on that?
I do. And again, that's an issue that came up constantly because a lot of people think, well, you know, all we have to do is put people in treatment. And that's not the case. If they are not bottomed out, if they have not reached the point, whether it's a simple drug addiction issue or whether it's someone who chooses to drink and drive or smoke dope and drive, if they haven't bottomed out, if they aren't saying, I need the help, we can put treatment in front of them all day long. And I think the statistics, I don't know the statistics, sir, but I will tell you that they're poor. They're very poor. But again, so what do we then as a civilized society and the electeds of the people have left to do? The only way we can deter them is through incarceration. And if that costs money, then look at the money that we're saving. But this state offers people an alternative to incarceration, or at least in conjunction with incarceration under the appropriate circumstances. But there's no way that we can force them. They have to make that decision on their own. But on the other hand, for those that do want it, the supervision, the treatment, the program itself has to be something that has meat to it.
There is some compelling evidence that treatment's effective whether it's compelled or not, so they don't necessarily have to be ready for it. The drug courts have shown that. So, any other questions? Representative Clippard.
There's so many questions I want to ask each of you, but I'm holding my tongue.
You have limited time here.
Talk too much. Bottom line, though, to each of you is, because I've heard us talk so much about the suspect in this case, the bottom line is public safety. Would we all agree with that? We want to protect the citizens of the state from this tragedy we've heard today happening to others. Am I correct in that?
Amen.
Thank you.
Okay. Great. Thank you very much to law enforcement for coming forward on this. We'll hear finally now some statistical information and also support from the Attorney General's office. Let's have Lana Weinman come up, Weinman, and also Shelley Baldwin from the Traffic Safety Commission. Oh, sure. Anyone else who wants to testify? Yeah, if you didn't sign up. Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, I didn't. I saw you. Is it Dahls?
Dale.
Dale. Oh, I'm sorry. Dale. Please go ahead. I'm sorry I didn't call you. I got you mixed up there.
Well, good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Dale Panettone from Yakima, Washington. I'm here with members of my family, and I had written a speech, but they've said everything I was going to say. So I'll make it brief. And I think I would like to address one aspect of this, and that is the cost. That's come up several times. And I would just like to remind the committee that there is a cost regardless. There's been a cost to our family. There's loss of productivity. There are insurance payouts. There is medical expenses. There's counseling. There's a cost regardless of what we do here today. And we're just one of the 220 families that Senator Padden mentioned. And so we tend to focus on what it's going to cost us to do this, but there's a cost regardless of what we decide to do. And when studies show that a person may drive up to 80 times before they get caught, why are we requiring people to get caught 5 times before we have any teeth in our laws? When our state has laws that are so lenient that it's not a deterrent, then I think we've let our citizens down. And I think that's where we're at. I'm proud of where I live. I'm proud of our state. And we should be a leader in our country, and we're not. And so I would encourage you guys, if you could, to move this forward to give to Governor Inslee. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Dale. Thanks to the Panettone and Bartlett families for coming to testify. It really literally puts a face on this tragedy, and we appreciate your courage. Please proceed, Lana.
Good morning. Lana Wyman with the Attorney General's Office. I'm the Chief Prosecutor for the AG's Office, and I'm here representing Mr. Ferguson, Bob Ferguson, who supports this bill and encourages this committee to pass it. I would like to first thank Senator Padden and Representative Clippert and yourself, Mr. Chair, for your leadership in this area. It's really important. I've been a prosecutor for my entire 25-year career, and I have sat with families just like this for years in the courtrooms. We cannot fix this problem in the courtrooms with vehicular homicide laws and the DUI laws. We need to do something more to prevent these tragedies. I can tell you from firsthand experience that I have seen a lot of tragedies in the criminal justice system, but none probably more discouraging than these because they're so preventable. Ironically, today is the day that the last person I convicted for a vehicular homicide is being released from prison. That trial was 6 years ago, and it got a lot of notoriety because he fled to Ireland and was extradited back to Ireland. 6 years ago was his trial and conviction, and he's being released today. He killed 3 people and critically wounded 3 others, and he had prior DUI arrests in the only 6 years that he was driving on our highways. So while his case wouldn't have been prevented by this law itself, it is unfortunately typical of what we see in the criminal justice system. It's very rarely by the time do we get to a vehicular homicide has that person not had a prior DUI arrest or at least been stopped. And it is incredibly difficult to sit with those families and explain to them that this is the best we can do. Quite frankly, we can do better to prevent those tragedies. Thank you very much for your support.
Thank you, Lana. Shelley.
Representative Goodman, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Shelley Baldwin from the Traffic Safety Commission. As been mentioned before, our state has a goal of zero traffic fatalities and serious injuries by 2030, and what we do in policy affects our ability to reach that goal greatly. So thank you for hearing this bill today, and thank you for everybody who's been working on it. Here are the facts. From 2009 to 2013, 1,126 people died in crashes in Washington involving an impaired driver. And that makes an average of 225 stories, just like we heard today, every year in our state. Impaired driving is a factor in 50% of our state's total traffic deaths. So 2,280 in the last 5 years. Between 2009 and 2013, 1,126 deaths. Drivers with prior DUIs are 62% more likely to be involved in a fatal crash than drivers who have no DUIs, similar drivers with no DUIs. And we've talked a lot about costs today. The National Highway Traffic Safety Administration 2010 study estimated that the economic and societal impact of one alcohol-involved traffic death is over $10 million. Okay, that doesn't account for the pain and the emotional toll that this takes, but just what it takes our society to recover from one crash. So that means in Washington, we've incurred $2.2 billion in economic and societal costs associated with impaired driving every year for the past 5 years. These impaired driving deaths are also completely preventable. During the summer of 2013, the legislature convened an impaired driving work group to study DUI strategies, and one of them was this issue of charging on the fourth as a felony. We wanted to look at all the research and really decide what we know about it, and what we can tell you is that no other state has gone from 5 for a felony to 4 for a felony, so we can't tell you that there's research that supports this or doesn't support it. But we do know that what works with DUIs, especially people with serious substance abuse issues, which is when they have multiple DUIs, what you're looking at is intensive supervision and treatment. And you can order people into treatment. It actually works really well. Spokane does have probably the state's premier model of order in to treatment. And those people that opt into treatment, it's hard. That supervision and that treatment is hard. And about 3 months into it, they're like, you know, I made this choice and I'm out of here. I'm done with this. It's too difficult. The people that are actually ordered in about 3 months, they don't have that same thing because they don't see it as a choice. So they are actually a little more likely to stick with that program in Spokane. We're conducting research right now on that Spokane program and hope to be able to develop a model that we can implement in other places in the state for order and treatment. And that's one other thing that this bill does is it provides some money for prevention, allows the Traffic Safety Commission to do grants to look at prevention. There's a lot of good people out there that are doing good work, like what we see in Spokane, that we could help fund with this bill. So I'll take any questions, and thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Shelley. Representative Clipper has a question.
Thank you, Chair Goodman. So you gave us a lot of solid numbers about fatalities associated with DUI. For both of you, would you agree that on top of those fatalities, there are many, many other people who survived these horrible crashes whose lives are changed in an instant for the rest of their lives?
That's true.
Many of them
injuries, yeah.
Harmed horrifically and do not lead the same life, even if they survive and live the crash than their lives. For instance, had the gentleman who we talked about today, had he lived through that crash and actually lived, his life would never have been the same because of the injuries he would have sustained, even if he lived. Am I correct in that?
That is absolutely correct. The number of serious injuries that involve an impaired driver are also extremely high.
Is it about the same number, the number of serious, the sort of life-changing injuries is about the same as the number of fatalities?
Probably double.
Double, okay. Lana?
Yes, I agree completely that it changes their lives, it impacts their lives. In fact, I spoke to one of those victims yesterday. He's one of the victims I talked about in the case that I just spoke about. Three of those people were, when I say critically injured, I mean they were in the hospital for months and in rehab centers for months and months after that. And 8 years after that collision, or 6 years, I guess it was after the collision when we were finally getting to trial, they were still critically impacted in their lives by what had happened to them and, quite frankly, by the loss of their friends. You know, while some would look at them as the lucky ones, I don't think they looked at themselves as the lucky ones. They had to live with that tragedy and the loss of their friends. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Yes. I just want us to consider them also.
Mm-hmm, indeed. Thank you. Any other questions? Thank you very much for coming forward, and thanks to everyone for excellent testimony. It's been a really a very instructive hearing for us. That will conclude testimony and conclude the hearing on second substitute Senate Bill 5105. And we are out of our public hearing, and we're going to be conducting a the discussion now among our members about the interim plan. So thanks to all who attended. Very much. Thank you. I don't know. And where's Luis? Oh, okay.